Blog Talk Radio.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble's face. You won't see him again. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up, don't sit down? Stand up, don't back down. Stand up, shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, American.
Welcome to another exciting show with Southern Sense on Blog Talk Radio. So turn up the volume and enter our chat room, or grab your phones, call in, and join the conversation. Help us to restore the republic to this country and inspire the majority to be silent no longer.
Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will, American. Will you stand up? Don't sit down. Stand up, don't back down. Stand up and shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.
Good afternoon to another Friday here on Blog Talk Radio. This is Southern Sense. I'm your host, Ann, and I've got Cool Mike with me today. Good afternoon, Cool Mike.
Good afternoon, the radio chick.
Hey, we've got the chat room heating up already. We've got John, the marathon pundit, in. We've got Tesla, socialism is not an option. We've got Thomas, the invisible, visible conservative. And we've got The Q. Thomas is also saying he's doing some Tea Party speaking engagements in March, which is fantastic. Good going for Thomas. He's got his enterprises going nicely. I do have a couple of things I want to mention before we get started, and we're waiting for our guests to call in. We have the South Carolina Tea Party Convention happening in Myrtle Beach this coming weekend. So I'm driving up to Myrtle Beach tomorrow. And we'll be back in time for our next guest on Tuesday, Pam Geller from Atlas Shrugged. So anyone interested in the South Carolina Tea Party, you know, just follow me up on Twitter or on Facebook. Also, January 28th in Myrtle Beach also, there's going to be a rhino hunt. It'll be at the Veterans Cafe at the Old Air Force next to the VA clinic in Myrtle Beach. Guest speaker will be Harry Keebler. Also, and that weekend, the 28th and 29th in Myrtle Beach, there will be a gun show. So for more information, you can go to rhinohunt.nt or patriotcrossroads.com. And I do have one sad note. A while back, we had a guest, James Tapscott. He's with the Ramona Tea Party out in California. And he's someone that is really, really funny. Another black conservative out there. And unfortunately, yesterday morning, his wife passed away. So our prayers go out to James Tapscott out there in California. They were married for quite a long time, and I think he said 32 years. So it's going to be, if everyone can just say a nice prayer for James Tapscott. He was a A great guest, very knowledgeable, very informative, and I'd hate to think of something like that. It's devastating. Anyway, Mike, what's up?
Well, my condolences as well on behalf of yourself, myself, and the show. I'm really excited about today's show with our congressman as well. We got a lot of exciting things planned for 2012. And I'll tell you, stay tuned. Today's featured show, of course, I think it's all about you, Annie, because I'll tell you, I don't think Blog Talk has much love for me. But I'll tell you, it's wonderful. I'm really looking forward to talking Congressman Scott. I saw online, I was listening, I think it was maybe Jesse Jackson or Harold Ford Jr., one of them. And as always, I almost think they try to lay a guilt trip on these wonderful conservatives just because of the color of their skin. If you think differently, if you believe in Jesus Christ, if you believe that your kids should be going to a different school or whatever, somehow you're not, I don't know, Annie, whatever word I'm looking for, somehow you're just a bad person, or you're not, let me word it this way, if these are the only things you have on a person, I think whoever your opposition is really stretching it, because this guy is a true conservative, not only a true conservative, a true Tea Party conservative, which we know in this world we are few and far between. I wonder if Thomas Jefferson and George Washington, or Thomas Jefferson and the founders of the Declaration, I wonder if they were also labeled too, all these names that Representative Scott and several other in Congress are being labeled by our dear friends in both major parties.
Oh, that's true. It's true. You notice how with the advent of more religious, more Christian, devout athletes, wherever they are, they're getting a larger audience. And Tim Tebow is the perfect example. The highest played game was Green Bay, New England, and that was 3.9 million viewers, and that broke all TV records. Now, Tebow, when he played this past game, it was 4.2 million. 4.2 million people watched it because of Tebow.
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that he is young, single, very good-looking, and rich. But, yeah, it is, Annie, and this is what I had tried to actually say in my open. I apologize, I didn't find the right words for it. But the bottom line is that for some reason or another, where is it that Martin Luther King, who said someday he hopes you will be judged by the content of your character. Well, the same people who supposedly are calling Martin Luther King a hero and a role model are basically saying if you don't think like this, that somehow you're not really a black person, or just derogatory towards whatever. When we've been way past that in this world, because you believe in fiscal responsibility in government, because you also attend church or believe in Christ, because you don't believe in wasteful spending, because you believe in that so-called Constitution, somehow you're a American, or you're a less traditional, whatever your nationality or heritage may be. Sounds to me like the enemies are really doing whatever they can to keep power, because as frustrating as this is for us true conservatives, there is a change in the air, and you can sense it coming.
Yeah, it is true. That is very, very true. There is a huge change, and I think with the advent of the Tea Parties, it allowed players such as Tebow to be more vocal in their Christianity. You're not a nerd anymore if you thank God.
Well, since when in this world, Annie, have we really like put a black cloud over these people? Because our founders made it very, very clear that there's no discrimination against your religion, regardless of what it was. Since when have we all of a sudden just decided to discriminate against every religion, with the exception of
Islam.
Muslim religion? And, I mean, the bottom line is that where is it that somehow you're less of a black person if you believe in the principles that you believe in, that I believe in. If you know you don't believe socialism is an option, where is it? All of a sudden, you can be labeled an un-American. I mean, these people that are basically, you have a bunch of bureaucrats in power doing everything they can to keep power. When you can sense there is a change in the air, and I think the Republican primary this week, which we'll talk more about in the second half of the show when the congressman's off, I think it's a perfect example of the Republican Party in some ways is in a little chaos because they're unsure who really is going to lead this party into the into the convention. Is it going to be a true conservative? Or is it going to be someone along the lines of what we've seen the last, last few terms? There's a lot of questions need to be answered. On top of that, Annie, a new horse may emerge as champion of this primary that nobody saw coming.
Then who do you think that would that be?
Well, my whole point is I don't know if that person is in the race yet, but I think this next week tells an awful lot of people that. A lot of Republicans are in search of the conservative agenda and not necessarily – I think they stood up, and the conservatives I think are a little split, but the bottom line is I think that, you know, we're not looking for a moderate. We're looking for somebody who is a conservative, period. And part of that represents the pro-life movement, not just on abortion but for life. And many other things that fiscally irresponsibility through the years, we've just lost. Thomas like Sarah Palin. But I think basically if there's a half a dozen people out there, Annie, that are true conservatives that we're just kind of watching to see what happens, I think now they'll make a move. And I think over the weekend we're going to see a couple people jump in the race. I don't know if Jeb Bush is going to jump into the race, which I don't know anything about Jeb Bush other than he belongs to the Bush family. But I also think Rick Santorum got a better – he really hasn't been in the race, but I think he got a better showing than most had expected. And Ron Paul, certainly a constitutionalist, scored a lot better than what anybody would think.
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that what we've seen so far have been either caucuses and or primaries that is open to either party voting in it. So, you know, you're voting in a Republican primary, but you can be a Democrat.
Yeah,
and
well, and
that's, I think that is why Paul is showing so well.
Well, I think in a lot of ways Ron Paul, despite being lost on foreign policy, represents an awful lot of what America needs to go back to domestically. We need to... I'm not quite – I like Representative Paul, but, I mean, I'm not quite as – times change. And as much as I am a big believer in the Constitution, you have got to enact some – you can't have heroin addicts staggering all over the streets. And but anyway, to get back to the main subject, I think we need to really, really – I think we need to breed more constitutionalists. And I think an awful lot of people are starting to stand up for it because they know it's one way or the other. Once it's lost, it's going to be very hard to get back. And as it slowly eradicates, I think the movement is taking place. I think it's growing. And I do think you see more and more of our movement out there. And I don't know that they're getting more media attention, but they're certainly voting now in packs like wolves.
Well, that's where I'm finding, too, more and more people becoming involved in the vote. And I got to tell you a story. I had someone call me yesterday because, of course, I got myself in the news again and obviously knew I was part of the Tea Party here. And he was asking if we were endorsing any candidate. And he was asking what Tea Parties were endorsing candidates. And I said, you know, I can't answer for other Tea Parties, but I can answer for ours, that we don't get behind anyone going into the primary. And he was like, well, why do you do that? And I says, our job is to get people out there and motivated and get them interested and get the issues out in front so they know what they're fighting for, what they're actually voting for. And I says, if you make that decision on your own, not having a Tea Party or someone else telling you, I'm endorsing this person, so you got to vote for them. If you make that decision on your own, you're going to be motivated to get up off that couch, turn off the TV, and go out and vote. You're going to get motivated to stand up make that phone call, send that fax, send that email, write that letter. If I say, you know, we got to do this, you know, we've got to support this person no matter what, you know, take warts and all, you're not going to be interested. You're going to say, well, who are you to tell me, you know, how to think? I want you to think on your own. And I think the problem with all these people coming out and endorsing going into the primary is causing that. I think it's a reverse ripple effect.
Well, and it does. When sometimes in life when a local millage is defeated, they bring it back right away. And sometimes if it's defeated again, bang, you get it. They try to ram it down your throat. But
and they
figure
sooner or later you're going to get worn out and give up. You know, we've got a couple of calls coming in, and also we've got a shout-out from B-Long. He said, or she said, I don't know if B-Long's a he or she, honestly.
She's a smoking hot Asian, I can tell you that.
Okay. She writes, then, hi, I'm in class. Say hi to Western Michigan Poli Sci class. So hello out there. And we've also got a couple calls. We've got one waiting here for a minute. Let's bring this person on, and then we'll bring the next one on. And this is Thomas. Hello, Thomas.
Hey, I just wanted to comment real quick on what Mike just said about Representative Paul. Same thing as I did with Barack Obama. I watched his tendencies, and I've been watching the actions of Senator Paul, or Congressman Paul, sorry. And I'm going to tell you something. If he gets elected as the nominee and say by some miracle he wins, I honestly believe, and folks, I'm stating a personal opinion, he will be the conservative equivalent to Barack Obama to the 10th power. And I'm not going to go into why
Thomas,
I believe
Thomas,
that.
Hold that thought, because I think this is our guest. Let me bring them up.
Okay.
All right. Let me do this, and here we go. Is this Representative Scott?
Yes, ma'am. Good afternoon. Good to join your show.
Good afternoon. We see you got a head start on you.
Yes, I see that. Hey, I love that. When you have good men and women willing to enter into the conversation, you have to start it.
Yes, we do. I want to introduce you to our co-host, who is Cool Mike.
Cool Mike.
Hey, welcome, Congressman. Thank you for joining us today.
Look forward to the conversation.
Now, Congressman, I was looking over your bio, and it's really, really impressive. You were, let's see, you actually are a child of divorced parents, so your mom and you grew up knowing what it's like to come up from your bootstraps.
Yes, we absolutely learned the hard way the value of this great nation, and I tell you what, much can be said about getting it the hard way, but I frankly think that's a powerful ingredient for motivation. We probably need to understand that getting it the hard way is okay. It's worked out very well. I have an old saying, you can pay me now or you can pay me later, but if you pay me later, the price is greater. I'm not sure who said that first, but what it really underscores is the necessity of delayed gratification as a part of the equation of success in America.
Now, I was going to trick you with something, but unfortunately it looks like I didn't upload it. You were involved with Chris Holly in putting a CD together?
I'm not even sure who Chris Holly is.
He redid the song The Times Are Changing, the Bob Dylan song.
Huh?
Yeah, he has a huge thank you on the back of his CD for you and your staff in the first and the South Town Halls.
He may have it, but...
trying to sell some more CDs or something.
Cool Mike, that's what it sounds like to me. And I will say that, we haven't been part of any productions that I am aware of, but
well,
I'm happy to hear what he said.
Well, he has a video up with the song. He's performing the song, and I did a double take when I was looking at the video, and I'm going, no, I just saw this man yesterday. And I'm looking again. I stopped it, replayed it, and there you are standing in front of a microphone singing.
Yeah, I must be singing. I only sing one song publicly, and it's typically Hit the Road Jack to the President. Don't come back no more, no more, no more. If that's not the song, then and if that is the song, he has just simply packaged it and started making a profit off of my inability to sing.
Oh, boy.
Anybody can do that. I'm only going to say, wow, that's amazing.
We're giving the primetime media some weekend news to talk about right now here on Southern Sun. Congressman, my question for you, Congressman, is how do you address these haters out there that obviously we see people, Martin Luther King said it, talked about judging people by the content of their character, yet because you believe in fiscal responsibility, because you believe in America, the Constitution, et cetera, somehow you're not black, or you're – how do you address that when they come from Maxine Waters or Representative Ford or people that – I call them haters because basically – go ahead.
I wish I had a nickname like Cool Mike. Number one, that's kind of Cool Mike, by the way. But I will simply say that I don't really worry so much about what people think about me, especially other elected officials who are on the left, because, frankly – we are diametrically opposed to the philosophical undergirding of the reality of this universe. I'm completely convinced that the only way to go forward is for us to take the responsibility, no matter your circumstances, and make the best out of it. Others believe that because of your circumstances, someone owes you something. To bring those two sides together is impossible and should always be so. I'm a big believer that the good Lord has blessed us with common sense, equipped us with a lot of tools, and no matter where you start, he measures the progress you make in life. And if you want someone to do that for you, you're going to be disillusioned, unhappy, and without question, whining for the rest of your life.
That's very, very well put. Matter of fact, recently Senator DeMint was interviewed. I'm looking for the interview because I did print it out. But he was accused of being divisive when DeMint was explaining in the interview that, in fact, you're finding it very difficult to find the Democrats being willing to compromise. They're trying to force you on their side of the line instead of the two of you meeting in the middle of the line.
And you're certainly right, by the way, without any question. Here's a prime example of such a case. During the whole super committee, which was the definition of super has changed in my lifetime. It was not the super that was superior. It was certainly the super that was inferior. But the whole super committee's objective was to find a way to cut spending. They did absolutely positively nothing. And they had hinted, some of the Republicans had hinted at increasing revenues to the government by more than $200 billion. The Democrats said, well, if you're willing to increase it by $200 billion, then we need $500 billion. Well, they said maybe $400, so they went to $800 billion. Speaker Boehner said something about $800 billion, which I would have voted against any increase whatsoever anyways, but he was talking about an $800 billion increase, and they said $1.2 trillion. So their definition of common ground and finding the middle ground is whatever you say, let's double it, and then let's start there. There's no way to find common ground with people who seek to politicize the end result and not achieve common ground for the American people.
Now, what I find interesting is they're asking for cuts in spending in areas where we really shouldn't be doing it. They want to bring down the military budget down to 3.4% of our GDP. That is the lowest we have ever been, but they're not touching entitlements at all.
Well, you look at a $495 billion cut in military spending, you only need to scratch your head before you come to the conclusion that something ain't right. And I mean it just like that. Something ain't right. And what you find out that's not right is in a world that is becoming more volatile, in a world that is filled with violence, keeping our national security in the perspective and in the frame of Article 1, Section 8 under the enumerated powers, here's a place where Congress should actually invest the resources of the nation to achieve an objective that is based on the Constitution. What does he want to do? Well, the president suggests that the Constitution is a living, breathing, evolving document. So I guess that means he can do whatever he wants to do, no matter what the Constitution says. I don't believe the nonsense that it's a evolving, living document. Our founding fathers had it right. The only objective of the federal government should include our national interest and the natural boundaries of this nation. And if we are going to achieve our goals and our objectives, we have to do so by simply looking at those enumerated powers, understanding that we have really started to drift so far away from them, and find a way to pull ourselves back into the constitutional context that made us great. He doesn't care about any of that. He cares about creating an imperial opportunity for him to rule by consolidating more power in the federal government. Long sentence, paragraph, whatever you want to call it, but I think it's simply the truth.
Well, did you catch his speech today at all?
I heard him say something. I didn't hear his speech at all, but I did hear the results of his speech, which is his desire to move small business to a cabinet position, perhaps to consolidate some departments.
Well, he was asking Congress to give him the power to consolidate various bureaus and agencies within the government, but that is Congress's business to do. They got it during World War II, and it went up until, I believe, 1984 under Ronald Reagan, where he just said, I don't need this power. This power belongs to Congress. And he's asking to have that power back. He's trying to, from what it looks like to me, to increase his centralization of power in the White House and decrease the power of Congress. That's how I'm seeing it. And one of the things that bothered me, there was a GAO report back in March of last year, and I'm trying to remember what the number was. I think it was 11, 113 or 118 or something like that. And they spoke about what Congress can do to eliminate a lot of duplicate agencies.
Yes.
Would you be willing to give them that power back or not?
Definitely not. I mean, I think this president has done a great job of trying to sell that in order for all things to get better in this country, he needs more power. False. Absolutely so. Here are some simple examples. When you think about the fact that the GAO said, and I agree that we have a lot of duplication in our government, up to $200 billion we can save by simply eliminating the duplication in our government. Should we do that? Of course we should. But should we amass more power and hand it over to the president? Absolutely not. Between his executive orders and his recess appointments and the individual mandate, he is already moving in the direction of gathering on the resources and the power and centralizing it, which according to our founding fathers was the exact opposite of their intentions for this country. They wanted a competitive environment found in the 9th and 10th Amendments, that allowed the states to determine and to dictate what was in the best interest of their citizens when there was such a dispute among the people, but not among the federal government versus the states. This is what we're seeing played out as the federal government sues South Carolina or Arizona over our immigration laws, while the NLRB sues our state and Boeing within our state over whether or not they can locate jobs in our state. We see time and time again the results of this centralizing of power and the collecting of our revenues to protect us. We don't need to be protected. We need to be unleashed.
I have a couple of callers coming in here, and this one is from Sarge. Sarge, you're on the air?
Hey, Andy, how you doing, man?
All right, how you doing?
And Congressman Scott, it is a joy and a pleasure to speak with a man of conservative and constitutional principles such as yourself. I am honored, sir.
Thank you, Sarge. I appreciate you calling into the show. It's good to be with you.
I have a couple of questions, actually. And we have noticed the blatant usurpation and consolidation of power by Barack Obama in regards to Article 2, Section 2, and his abuse of the recess appointment authority. I'm sure that you think that that is something that is, at the very least, unseemly, shall we say. But I would say, and this will go into my question, I would say that this is a mere continuation of the pattern of man is already established from the very moment that he became president of the United States, and that is, it would seem his very existence in the office is a usurpation of the power. Now, I know this is an uncomfortable topic for seemingly everyone in Congress, but if you consider the massive amount of objective evidence on the record that militates against Barack Obama being constitutionally qualified to be president of the United States, I would ask, why is the Congress not at least investigating the possibility that this man is usurped the president, not only in the fact that he's not constitutionally qualified by virtue of being a natural born citizen, by virtue of the fact that he's proffered forged documents to verify his provenance for the job?
Yes, yeah, Sarge, you asked a mouthful of questions there. I will simply say that first and foremost, while the whether or not he's a natural born citizen of this country may still be in dispute and in question, but there's no doubt that the reality of the long form, however he got it to wherever he got it from, came to us, and at the end of the day, it has been received and accepted as valid and legitimate. So whether or not he ought to be where he is won't take him from that position. So what we should do, from my perspective, is focus on the fact that his recess appointments were, without any question, unconstitutional. So we have grounds to wage war with the American people as it relates to how we find a president who understands and appreciates the Constitution and will stand up and govern consistent with it. If we do that in November of 2012, this year, we could find Christmas for the first time in November.
I see, but I would submit to you, sir, that the very fact that he seems to be allowed to get away with the most basic premise of whether or not he's allowed to be president, the very simple constitutional qualification of being 35 years of age, 14 years of resident of the United States, and a natural-born citizen, I think he assumes he's got a green light to do almost anything. I don't think this is a peripheral issue. I think it's central to the fact that he governs the way he does. And I would submit to you that I don't think the issue is actually a birth certificate issue. It is a natural-born citizen issue. The man has confessed that his father was never even a legal resident alien, mainly on a student visa. I submit to you that you cannot be a natural-born citizen unless both of your parents were citizens at the time of your birth. And the fact that the man admits, during his campaign, that he was born a British subject, a Kenyan subject, and he claims a citizen of the United States. And I would ask you, how is it possible to be a natural-born citizen of the United States on allegiance to no other country when you admit to being born a citizen of three countries?
Sarge, I do have callers backing up, so I'm going to let them answer that question, then I have to move on, honestly.
Well, Sarge, I appreciate you taking the time to call on to the show. But I will just simply say that from my perspective, the best thing we can do to remove this president from the White House is to fight the future battles, fight the present battles, and that is simply not one that will have any traction moving forward.
Great answer. And I agree, too, because the bottom line is if we want to take this into a court, we can unelect him before we can get it settled in the court.
Absolutely. I mean, you have to figure out which battles we can actually fight. There was an opportunity and a window of opportunity early on. But frankly, whether it was dodgeball or whether it was just not important enough, for whatever reason, that issue is no longer going to be solved by a court between now and the time that he's no longer in office.
Before we jump to the next call, just a quick question. How's everything been going for you as far as your freshman term and maybe a couple of things you really, really like and a couple of things that kind of surprised you and, you know, just a little bit of background info for us?
Certainly. Yeah, cool, Mike. I would tell you that my first year has been one of illumination. I have learned very quickly that even with $15 trillion worth of debt, even knowing that we're borrowing 42 cents on the dollar in order to spend it, we keep looking for ways to increase spending. It is an inappropriate, ineffective, and wrong-headed, for the lack of a better term, wrong-headed move on behalf of our elected officials to keep spending money we know we don't have, buying things we know we can't afford. Someone once told me that the structural deficiencies of the nation have not yet been revealed to the human eye. And understanding that the structural deficiencies produces the $15 trillion debt. So unless we're going to have the courage to talk entitlement reform, unless we're going to have the courage to look for the sacred cows found in the spending, I can't call it a budget since we haven't had a budget in more than 3 years, basically, we have to be willing to dig deep into the spending of this country and really start having a conversation about how to create a solid foundation. And that means making changes that will be painful today, but will save this great republic tomorrow. That's been one of the most amazing things I've uncovered, is the inability to do basic addition and subtraction in D.C. Another hot spot that I found that I think is very exciting is that there are a number of elected officials, a minority, but a number of elected officials that are committed to the cause of freedom, that really believe that the American dream must be preserved, and it has to be preserved by sacrifice. New word, sacrifice. But if we do that today, the country will be stronger tomorrow. So those are two different things that I've learned being in Congress for this year. One excites me. The other one is really painful.
I have a call, a local person here from South Carolina. Let me bring this person in on the air. 843, South Carolina, you're live. Who am I speaking to?
This is Bet for Freedom.
Hi, how are you doing? You have a question for the congressman?
Excuse me?
You have a question for the congressman?
Yes, sir. Congressman Scott, sir, how you doing?
Yes. I'm doing well, sir. How are you?
I can't complain. Don't do any good. I have two questions for you. I am a disabled veteran. I am a big Second Amendment supporter. I do hold a CWP, concealed weapons permit, and I do own a few guns. I would like to hear your thoughts on this government trying to put a ban on such weapons as AR-15s and magazine clips that hold more than 10 rounds. And my next question is, why does it take so long for the Veterans Administration to get around to making sure that us veterans have enough money to live off of?
Yeah, two very important questions and powerful questions. When you look at the mandatory spending of our country, about $400+ billion goes to a number of reasons and programs, one of which includes Veterans Affairs. There's no doubt that one of the things I hope that we do a better job of is actually understanding the priorities of our nation from a financial perspective. Those folks who serve our nation should be in a strong position to actually expect that the contract that they have with the American government, the federal government, and with the American people is the contract that we will honor. We made promises to our veterans, and we need to live up to those promises. If you actually have an issue that you need addressed, I'm happy to give you my phone number so that my veterans folks can help you with the specific issue. But we have a bigger issue and a bigger problem with veteran affairs, and it's only going to be more complicated and more complex as we see veterans, men and women, come home, retire from the military with this 10-year fight in Iraq and now Afghanistan. With the volatility going around this world, we're going to have more resources for our veterans and not fewer. That's why I'm so concerned about cuts of $500 billion over the next 10 years in military spending, because sooner or later it will bleed over into Veterans Affairs. As it relates to the question about being a Second Amendment supporter, I do have my concealed weapons permit and believe very strongly that one of the basic rights of this nation is the right to defend yourself. And so this whole notion that we have to figure out how to ban the number of bullets that come out of a clip or ban certain types of weapons, I have been consistently on the side of opposing such bans. But to illuminate the conversation on the Second Amendment, one of the areas where I would say that we should focus our attention really is on our municipalities. A lot of cities, even here in South Carolina, in the big red state of South Carolina, you see a lot of municipalities looking for ways to restrict our gun rights. I would say pay particular attention to local legislation or laws called ordinances that will be springing up over the next few years as the fight continues whether or not the Second Amendment should be applied only federally and leaving municipalities to do what they will or not. That's going to be an interesting conversation and a very important divide that you will see some municipalities creating this wedge on whether or not there is applicability of the Second Amendment in municipalities. I'm not quite sure how they make that argument, but I've started to hear it, and I believe that there's going to be a major push over the next couple of years as municipalities have seen their gun ordinances overruled, i.e. Washington, D.C. and other places. They're going to find another workaround to see if they can make a way to take away some gun rights. I will be on the side of freedom. I will be on the side of the NRA, and I will be on the side of the Second Amendment.
All right, I've got another caller here coming in, and let me bring this person on. They've been waiting very patiently. Area code 847, you're on the air live. Who am I speaking to?
Hello, this is John Ruberry with Marathon Pundit, Congressman.
Hi, John.
Hi there, and I was one of the bloggers on your conference call back in September, so it's good to speak with you once again, sir.
Hey, yes, sir, John. How are you?
I'm okay. I don't want to sound like a one-issue guy, but I'm going to bring up the National Labor Relations Board, and knowing that the House doesn't figure into the advised consent part of these appointments, the House can, of course, defund the National Labor Relations Board. So I was wondering, do you think that strategy or that maybe that tactic is on the table for the House?
Absolutely, John. Thank you for your comment. And if your only subject is the NLRB, I will say without any question that you have chosen a very good single subject to stay on top of. Because
well,
the impact of NLRB on the cause of freedom in this nation can't be emphasized enough. When you think about the two recess appointments that are unconstitutional, the president decided to put two recess appointees on the NLRB board. What you're seeing is a fueling of union workers and a funding of his presidential reelect campaign, and it is to the damage of right-to-work states. It is to the damage of our exporting goals, companies like Boeing, having to negotiate with not just the union workers, but with the NLRB. This is absolutely just insane. So your position on working for reality in the NLRB and with the whole conversation around the rights of workers, both union workers and non-union workers, the NLRB is no longer an impartial, unbiased referee. They have chosen a side, and they're going to stay on that side. So Austin Scott from Georgia has a bill that completely defunds the NLRB. I have a bill, H.R. 2587, that eliminates the remedy of displacing workers as a part of the remedies and or solutions that the NLRB can use. So, and then there's a litany of other bills as well. I have an ERA bill, Employees' Rights Act, which tries to make sure that members of unions every 3 years recertify the union and stops quickie elections, which the NLRB is proposing 10-day election cycles for unions. 10 days. Even though the average election takes 35 days. So when you really think about the position that the NLRB is putting America from a global competitive standpoint, it is actually reducing our competitive advantage that we once had, and they are a part of the problem. I have about a minute left, Ann.
Okay. This has been absolutely fascinating. I had so many questions to ask you, and I got about a stack of notes here. One of the things someone is asking out in the chat room is, what are your views on the WTO? Now, this one I don't know, what is the GATT, and also NAFTA, about its impact on local small businesses?
That is a great question that I cannot answer because I'm not familiar enough with the legislation that they are referring to, there have been three free trade agreements that have been passed, and my assumption is that the conversation would head in that direction, but I'm not familiar enough with the topic to be fluent on the answer. I apologize, but I don't pretend to know something that I just don't know.
All right. We're talking about Obama's doing the unconstitutional appointments and asking about that power to restructure. One of the things that really disturbs me about his thing, well, first off, he quoted the GAO report itself in his statement, but he wants to combine various business bureaus together, and one of them being, the Commerce Department to the Small Administration and the U.S. Trade Office. U.S. Trade Office, and if you combine that with the Small Business Administration or others, it's kind of like cross-purposes, isn't it? Because one is looking for international treaties while the other is looking for internal.
And here's one thing we have to know about the president. I think that your basis hypothesis is fairly consistent with reality. The one thing we need to know about the president is he's never really been in business. So his understanding of actually how to make a company profitable and to restore an economy is based on lecture series and academics. I've owned a business for the last 13, 14 years, and I will tell you that what you read in the textbooks doesn't necessarily produce a profit at the end of the day. So, yes, our president in many ways will make suggestions on what he believes consolidation should look like. The only good news, the only silver lining, is that he's talking about consolidating government. I only hope that he's talking about reducing spending as we consolidate the government. He and I will probably not agree on where and how, but if he will help the Republican and the conservative cause by identifying areas to reduce spending, I will actually say, good job in that part. Hey, it's been good being with you, Ann.
Oh, it has been a pleasure.
To our next conversation with you, and I hope to see you in Beaufort or Hilton Head in the next few weeks when I come back through.
Well, if you're up in Myrtle Beach for this Tea Party convention, we will see each other again then.
Oh, I'll see you Monday then. I'm speaking there.
Oh, fantastic. I look forward to it, sir.
Y'all take care.
Thank you,
Mike. Congressman. Cool, Mike. Bye-bye now.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay.
Wow.
That was
Where are they? And where are the guys like him that just need to run in every single congressional race and for senator? Where are they?
I don't know, but, you know, I do have to apologize. Thomas wanted to ask another question, but as you know, we ran out of time. Let me just bring Thomas back on again. Thomas? I think he went to feed his dog. All right.
No, I'm here.
I'm sorry I couldn't get back to you. As you can see, we had so many good questions and great callers and comments here in the chat room. It's been fantastic.
I'm a professional. It happens, so am I supposed to be offended or something?
No.
Okay.
I just want to let people know that I was trying to get through all the questions, and people did send me questions through Facebook. There were some others that sent me through other avenues, but I couldn't get to all of them. You know, there's so many things to ask. So many different things to ask. I was going to ask them about the tax cut in the Keystone Pipeline, the Department of Defense bill, the bashing of Islam. I mean, there's so many things. But, Mike, how do you get to all of it?
You actually can't. And they're on limited time, and they obviously have made these appointments way in advance. As far as just their schedule is way in advance, so to even be able to sneak away for a half hour was really great. Yeah, whenever I've come to learn, when this is going back when I was with Perry Steele, when you write down say 10 questions, when you have a very good show, you'll be lucky if you get one of those questions in. Because, I mean, it just is. When you answer the questions, and they're very good questions, I think that basically what happens is that in order for an individual to answer the question and to answer it accurately, it just takes it takes more time. And when they're on limited time, it makes less and less time for the answers. I thought, as short as it was, I thought his answers were strong. I really like his conservative response. A lot of times people sugarcoat their conservative. For some reason, they don't want to really offend maybe the liberal Republicans or whoever.
Oh, Lord.
He was very, very strong in standing up for conservative values and against Barack Obama. I like that.
Yeah, I'm going to bring back our other two callers. Let me bring back Rick and Sarge here. Rick happens to live in the Myrtle Beach area. He's the one I was talking earlier about on the beginning of the show when I did the announcement for the Rhino Hunt and the gun show. So, Rick, how'd you feel about your congressman?
I think he's great. You know, it's just a shame that we can't get more people in office, you know, that thinks the way he does, you know. And, you know, I just had another question for him, but, you know, that was okay, too, you know, that, well, we didn't get it in because, you know, I'm sure, you know, people were waiting for, you know, to get their questions in. But I thought it was great, and I hope you have him on again, you know, and again, the Rhino Hunt meeting. Can I go ahead and do this?
Sure. I did okay. It earlier, but go ahead again.
Okay. There will be a Rhino Hunt meeting, and if you all don't know what Rhino is, Republican in name only, there will be a Rhino Hunt meeting at the Veterans Cafe at the old Air Force Base in Myrtle Beach. It's on 1144 Shine Avenue, across the street from the Veterans Outpatient Clinic, and it will be at 1 o'clock Saturday afternoon.
Okay, great. Now, we got another caller coming in. This is from New York, area code 212. You're on the air live. Who am I speaking to?
Hi, it's Kay Leslie Graves. How are you?
Hi, how you doing, Leslie?
Actually, it's Kay Leslie. That's my author's name and also my radio show name.
Oh, okay, Kay Leslie. And you notice I did ask your question.
You did. I appreciate your graciousness as a host. I understand how complicated it all is.
You mentioned you had a show. Where is your show located?
Actually, it's on Blog Talk Radio. It's Earth Moon Colony Books Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, great.
And on that show, actually, I chose to move it from environment to politically conservative because I realize I am a conservative. So,
Well, welcome aboard.
Thank
you.
I
always love to see people that had the epiphany.
Well, you know what? I had it late in life. I'm going to try to turn down my computer so that you don't have feedback. I had it very late in life, and I actually, you know, although it looks like Newt Gingrich is not going to be nominated, I did come out in support of him. You know, for the first time in my life, and I had a big show on why I felt the Republican Party was the way to go. You know, I realize also that we have a lot of people out there that are Tea Party patriots, and that's fine, too. The reason why I called, if I have to, I don't know how much time I have, but the reason why I called is because, you know, while we're all concerned with the number one issue, I feel, in the country, which is jobs, 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 I just find it... you know, I find it remarkable that a lot of our knowledgeable guests and also our political leaders are not talking about the free trade agreements under the World Trade Organization, which happened. It started under Democratic President Bill Clinton.
Right.
And just recently, Barack Obama agreed on the TPA, which is the latest version of the free trade agreements. I just find it remarkable that more people who are conservative are not looking at the impact on local businesses in our states, in our counties, of the globalization of the corporate, you know, entities. I mean, you know, I'm all for free trade as a conservative, as a new conservative. But when I look at what the, you know, the scholars of capitalism are talking about, they're talking about the fact that because of state capitalism practiced by China and also Russia, and also the wealth of sovereign nations, that free trade, the free trade environment doesn't exist in the world sense. So what I wanted to say is I'm just surprised that more of our conservative leaders are not looking at taking a hard look at the impact of the World Trade Organization and General Agreement of Trade and Tariffs on local business.
I think when the Congress was highly Democratic, we kind of got railroaded. It's something that a lot of our leaders, I'm finding here in South Carolina, have been looking at, because we did lose a lot of our textile industries and other industries that either went to Mexico or to China, and they're working on bringing them back. What you're finding it is happening, a lot of the governors are doing this to try to lure them back, and I think they're now starting to get Congress and Senate involved in it. We have a couple of people saying, I've got windows popping up all over the place. I can't answer all of them. But,
yes.
Thomas, you had another comment you said you wanted to make.
Yes, I actually wanted to comment to what Kay Leslie just said because I want to share something that was shared with me on my show last night. I interviewed a really good friend of mine who's running for U.S. Senate there in New Jersey. I don't know what it is about you East Coast folks, but y'all have a lot of phenomenal candidates and congressional men and women. But anyway, one thing that she shared with me was this. Everybody is so worried about China's economy overtaking us, the U.S. economy, and collapsing our economy. But one specific thing that she said to me, which something that I have always known, but I've never heard it talked about, is that if China tried to collapse our economy and say they succeeded, essentially what they just did would be committing economic suicide, because no matter how, you know, how the rest of the world may try to come up with their own system of currency, the euro is only strong because, irregardless of how weak the dollar may be, the dollar props up the euro. I don't know how it works, but it does. So if anyone tried to, China or Russia tried to collapse our economy and it succeeded, they would succeed in collapsing the economy of the entire world because everybody wants to buy American goods.
May I respond?
Yes,
sir. Sure. Yeah, I don't think that my concern was not about China or even Russia or any of the sovereign nations collapsing the U.S. economy. My concern is that, I spent a lot of time researching the teachings of the founding fathers. Okay,
right.
And that is what made me a conservative. When I realized how wise and how brilliant they were all, and, you know, this thing, I got to say, I'm a critic of Occupy Wall Street and a lot of their actions, but we have to acknowledge the fact that the corporations have become a entity, I want to say the fifth estate. Okay, the fourth estate is the newspaper media, but the fifth estate has become this PAC money, okay, which, as you know about the latest Supreme Court ruling of last year, which basically said that the corporation was an individual and could not be silenced, and therefore we have the leading Republican contender free to have his own PAC group blitz another Republican.
Right.
You know, talking about all the dirt. And this is all because of the fact that we have allowed the second estate, or it might be the third estate, that is the court system, to say that the court is equal to you and me. I mean, the corporation is an individual. Okay, and if the corporation is an individual, guess what? The individual has the rights, all the rights, privileges, and immunities as every American citizen. And I wanted just one more point, because I'm going on and on. If someone is to say that the U.S. economy is strong under the so-called free market, which I don't think really exists anymore.
It's not, yeah.
Then let me say something. Why are all the, if you find the Wall Streeters for the last 4 years talking about the true fact that investments in the so-called BRIC countries have increased, and people realize that if you want to be in business in 15 years, you have to have strong investments in the BRIC countries, and that is Brazil, Russia, okay, India and China. And that is where our corporations are going. And my only concern is, what is the impact on local business? Okay, I want to listen to you all.
Well, one thing about that, Kay Leslie, is that this, and I actually asked Anna that question. And one thing that most Americans don't know, while American companies, they can make money in China using their factories. The American dollar cannot be used within the walls or the borders of China. They have to spend American dollars outside China. So as a result of that, you have these American corporations that have trillions of dollars. I think last I heard it's approximately $20 trillion in cash sitting in accounts, just hoping and praying that our government will lower the corporate tax rate. Because legally in these other countries, they're not allowed to spend American dollars in these countries. So, I mean, it's the potential is there.
Thomas, and this is where some of the members of Congress are trying to make arrangements that companies can bring their cash back into the United States without having it heavily taxed, provided that they invest at least one-fourth of it in infrastructure and new hiring.
Right.
So
I love what you two are saying. I love it. I love what you're saying. I love it.
I haven't heard from another quarter that's been extremely quiet. Sarge, you still out there? Okay.
Sarge, hung up.
Okay.
What is the name of your show?
Hello.
Because you said you had a show.
Sarge is there. There he is.
Yeah. You just don't need me to say anything when you guys are making such great commentary. I've been listening to it and enjoying it thoroughly.
All right, Sarge.
I was wondering why no one had mentioned the absolute knockout punch that was given to the White House by the Supreme Court in the cause of religious liberty.
Yes, that's true. Yesterday, read that. That's cool. Forgot about that, but I read it.
All right, illuminate me.
Yeah, well, the court swatted away the government's claim. I'm talking about Eric Holder's EEOC, that...
Lutheran churches do not have the
right to fire a minister of religion who, after 6 years of Lutheran religious training, had been commissioned as a minister when elected by a congregation. Now, this minister, who also taught secular subjects, claimed discrimination in employment. And the Obama administration agreed with her, but the courts didn't. Unanimously, even Elena Kagan and Sonia Sotomayor, the wise Latina, even they went like 8-0. American courts have recognized the existence of a ministerial exemption, which keeps government's hands off the employment relationship between religious institutions and its ministers or its clergy. But in this case, the Department of Justice was saying that they were challenging the exemption's application and its very existence. But Chief Justice Roberts, writing for the whole damn court, said the government had to butt out. This is what he said. He said, requiring a church to accept or retain an unwanted minister or punishing a church for failing to do so intrudes upon more than a mere employment decision. Such action interferes with the internal governance of the church, depriving the church of control over the selection of those who will personify its belief. By imposing an unwanted minister, the state infringes the free exercise clause, which protects a religious group's right to shape its own faith and mission through its appointments. According to the state, the power to determine which individual will minister to the faithful also violates the Establishment Clause, which prohibits government involvement in such ecclesiastical decisions. Man, it don't get no clearer than that.
No, I saw that. I did cross my desk. I was up like about 2 o'clock in the morning doing research for our conversation with the Representative Scott, and I did cross that, and I had been following it. And what I found amazing on her thing is, she had been hired to teach, and she was hired as an assistant minister, but she ended up with this disease. So she ended up being, put to the sideline on disability, whatever you want to call it. When she wanted to come back, they said, well, we can't hire you this year because we've already hired a substitute. So they've already entered into a contract also. So she was trying to force them also in this step to break a contract and take her back. At that point, they said, no, we can't do that. We can't break the contract. We're not going to do that. It goes against all of our beliefs religiously as well as morally and legally. So she turned up at the church or school, I guess it's all one building, I'm not sure, and started a protest and made a whole big scene. At that point, they said, nope, that's it. You're definitely fired at that point. And it's because of those actions, I think the court made a completely correct decision because she broke whatever tenets that religion went by. They said, no, we don't behave this way. This is not what we teach in our religion. This is not what we believe in. So they said, yes, we have to stand up for our religious beliefs. And this is where I get into government should not define marriage. If you want to recognize a union between two individuals, whether or not they are same sex or opposite sex, call it a civil union if government wants to have it recognition. And that way you can cover all of your property rights, your other individual rights for visitation, inheritance, and so on and so forth. Those are then covered by a civil union. Government still gets their licensing fee, but you're not intruding on what a religion calls marriage.
Right. That's a
and
good,
I think
well,
this is going to be the next
think,
step
don't think,
from that court decision.
I don't think the government intrudes upon what religion is free to marry anyone they want. Any church can marry anyone they want. I do believe that the states have the right to define marriage. Correctly or incorrectly, they have the absolute right to define it, and they have. The problem with the homosexual activist movement is they will want to redefine marriage, and they won't admit that's what they want to do.
Well, see,
at least say we want a redefinition of marriage. Once they've come to that honest position, then we can talk about whether it should be redefined. But they have the same rights in marriage right now as everyone else does. Exactly.
But see, Sarge, my problem is with the word marriage. Take the word marriage out and plug in civil union. Marriage should be restricted to a religious definition. Because once you don't use it as a religious definition, you legally are now telling the Catholic Church they must marry gays. You're legally telling a Muslim imam that he must...
That would run afoul of the Establishment Clause. They can't tell the church who to marry.
That's
the,
right.
See, there's a difference between a religious ceremony and a secular ceremony, which marriage licenses is. You don't have to be in love with anybody to get a marriage license. You don't have to particularly desire to consummate the marriage if you want to get married. That's up to the other party if to say that I complain that my marriage is not consummated, I want a divorce. But you don't have to if both parties agree to it. The only requirement is are very straightforward. You got to marry someone of the opposite sex. They can't be married to anybody in any legal jurisdiction in the world anywhere. They can't be a member of the immediate family. They got to be of appropriate age. That's pretty much the same way in every state. That's secular. That has nothing to do with religion. That's the definition. And I if you think the reason for marriage has a simple matter of logic, without procreation, there's no need for marriage. What do you need state involved in your business for without the possibility of procreation? What do you need state for?
All right, hang on a second. Leslie?
Yes. I mean, this is another thing where I, as a new conservative, are confused. I think that actually there's a contradiction which some people seem to overlook, which is that the definition of marriage doesn't go back to any religious. I mean, it might. You tell me how many times marriage was mentioned in the Bible, but also tell me how many times it was mentioned in the Magna Carta or British common law or, you know, the other legal precedents for our U.S. Constitution. If the Constitution called for a separation between church and state, if the state decides, okay, yes, we want marriage and doesn't define it by any particular religious standard, I don't understand why the churches
knowing the penchant of our courts and how litigious our society is, this is why I'm saying take out the word marriage and put in civil union. Because one.
But why?
One,
why?
Very simply.
I think they're succeeding the cultural
the U.S.
Marxist
Navy
left.
Already,
I'm really opposed to it in that respect.
All right, sorry. The U.S. Navy last year already tried this and got their hands slapped. They already told their, the ones that do the religious.
Chaplains.
Chaplains. They already told their chaplains last year, issued an order, that they must perform gay marriages. It doesn't matter if you happen to have been Catholic or Muslim, and they were told these chaplains, you must comply with it because we now define marriage this way.
Okay,
and therefore,
but Annie,
we have the right to intrude upon your religious belief. The Navy tried it, that got slapped down. They're going to try it again, and that's why I say take the word of marriage out, put in civil union, and you solve the problem.
But Annie,
I think we'll just be creating a whole new category of problems if we do that. We'll be exceeding the high ground to the cultural Marxist left. What they're trying to do is gain legitimacy for homosexual behavior. That's all this is. It has nothing to do with any common sense. Why would anyone want the government involved in their affairs and there's no possibility of procreation? That's the purpose of marriage. To regularize the relationship between society, civilization, the children and the parents, to regularize the obligations of all those parties to the family. That's the purpose of it. Without procreation, it's really kind of nonsensical when you think about it. Even pagans understood that. Even pagans who were not Christian in Greece and Rome had marriage between a man or a woman or some variation of that theme, but it was never same-sex marriage. And the Romans were a bunch of sexual libertarians if there ever were one.
I was wondering, you know, as a new conservative, you know, if we think about even Barry Goldwater, who I understand is seen as an icon of conservative thought, okay, that the government has no place in social matters. Okay, so in other words, like if this show is going to be about, you know, Christian thought and mixed with the Republic, then I'll hang up and listen. But if this show, you know, is about the Republic and we're talking about the Constitution, which has nothing to do.
Yes, sir, it is, and that is why that argument should be made in every single state legislature.
Yeah,
our
government has
argument
no
business should be made in each and every state legislature. They should decide. If they decide on behalf of same-sex marriage or to change and redefine the nature of marriage, so be it. It is a secular matter. The legal definition of marriage in each state, since the states are not prohibited under Article 4 of the Constitution to legislate in such matters, then they are free to do so. The states are free to legislate in any matter that the Constitution has expressly forbidden them to, and the Constitution of the United States is utterly silent on marriage.
One thing, guys, one thing that I think what Kay Leslie is saying, he's talking about how, okay, talking about fiscal conservative and social conservative, you know. Here's the thing, and this, and I'm going to prove my point on my comment. You can't separate fiscal and social issue when it comes to conservatism, and here's the reason why. Look at global warming. To the left, that's a social issue. Look at environmental issues. That's a social issue. But yet what has happened, we have allowed the liberals to frame us in a way where they get to talk about their form of social and fiscal issues, i.e. take other people's money and spend it up while we hide our millions through shady dealings, and their idea of moral social issues, i.e. pro-choice, the whole pro-choice abortion issue. It is a social issue, but it's their social issue. And when we allow those two things to be separated based on their arguments when they don't do the same thing, that's where we have been losing the battle. So truth of the matter is, as Andy has said, we have to figure out how to have this discussion and discuss it in such a way that we take the power from the left to frame us in a way that we are not.
Very good, sir. And that's another reason why, here's where the federal government would have a role in marriage. See, the left is today are the most shady, deceptive, distortive, and lying bunch I've ever seen in American political life. What they will do is they will say, since one state recognizes our homosexual marriages in the state, then every other state under the full faith and credit clause of the Constitution must be obligated to accept it. Now, the full faith and credit clause, it was intended for those acts which are similar in every state. A subpoena in Vermont is essentially the same as a subpoena in Illinois.
Right.
A court order of protection is essentially the same in one state as another. But you see, marriage would be radically different. Say, if California defines it between two men and one man or 8-year-old boy, and another state has it between one man and one woman. It'd be radically different. There would be no way that marriage would be comparable. It wouldn't be a full faith and credit issue. It would be forcing a state to accept something that is not legislated in. That's why the Defense of Marriage Act would be critical, to say that no state would be required to accept marriage that is entirely dissimilar to the status of the marriage in the state where it exists. And that's what we have to be on guard of. No, the federal government has no business being involved in marriage because the Constitution is silent about marriage. It is a state matter. I will go into the state of Georgia and argue vociferously against changing the definition of marriage to anything but one man and one woman of appropriate age, not married to anyone in any other jurisdiction, and not a member of your immediate family. I will be against that radically, you know, no matter what they say. But I will make that argument in my state legislature. Those who want to change it can make that argument in their state legislature.
And the state legislature can then vote. What is your name? The fellow that talks very fast.
Sarge.
Who is that? Sarge?
Yes.
Sarge, let me ask you a question. Okay, I can't out-talk you because you talk very fast.
I don't think anyone can.
Nobody can. Sarge, let me ask you something. Why do you care, okay, who gets married to who? Why do you care?
I will
now,
tell you.
Now, if you say I care because of my moral, my religion, then now you're putting your religion over the Constitution. Why do you care?
Sir, again, you apparently
my
did
name
not
is Kay
listen
Lesley.
To me when I said, you apparently did not listen to me when I said
I'm trying
the
to
definition
listen,
of marriage sir. Legally is secular. It is not religious.
All right,
you're
so you don't care.
Religious.
You don't care who
the
gets married?
The legal definition of marriage in every state is secular. If
Sarge,
people
do you
in
care?
My state, yes, if people in my state
Sarge?
Can make an argument to the state legislator to get enough votes to redefine marriage, then I will accept it. I won't like it. I might argue against changing it back, but I will accept it because that is part of the small R Republican process. So
okay, I got you, Sarge.
I'm prepared to accept it. That is secular.
You.
So you're making
okay,
the religious
Sarge.
Argument, not me.
Sarge, so
okay,
basically
Sarge.
What you're saying, you want to decentralize authority from federal government and return it back to the states, which is what our founding fathers stood for.
Well, it is now. In the matter of marriage, it
that's
is
not
entirely
what our founding
within
fathers
the purview
did.
Of the states.
That's not what they stood
for. It is
for,
in
Andy.
No way, shape, form, or fashion at all involved with the federal government, nor should it
Annie,
be.
Annie?
Yes, yes.
I did extensive research on what the founding fathers actually said, and they actually fought very hard to build what we now have, which is a federal republic. Against the Confederates, the people that wanted a loose confederation of friendly states that just came together under a small federal government. Okay, the federal government, the founding fathers worked very hard to make sure that the federal government would be the power of last resort. That's why we're not a constitutional democracy. That's why we're not one vote. You know, let's all vote for the president. We have a representative democracy. Okay, so
exactly.
if somebody says that the founding fathers wanted states' rights over the federal rights, then I think that they should do a little bit more research as to what the founding fathers said and what they were very clear on. Okay, I'm going to have to stand packed on this, Sarge. Okay, the founding fathers were very, very clear talking about the dangers of the mass of Americans and the majority coming down and pouncing on any minority, and hence the federal government. Wait a minute, Sarge. Hold up, Sarge. The federal government had to be the power of last resort. Okay, so if anybody that is a conservative, okay, I'm trying to understand what being a conservative is. I'm a reborn conservative. Okay, so I want to understand why anyone. Okay, Sarge, I understand how you feel about marriage. That's great. That's clear. Andy, I don't know how you feel about it. Whatever it is your view. As Americans, we all have that right. Okay, I'm talking about what the founding fathers wanted, which is to make sure that no one group dominates over even the smallest American citizen. Okay, right now, I was talking about, before the religious thing came up, Sarge, I was talking about the fact that right now, it seems that the multinational corporations, with all that hidden wealth that we'd like to bring back, Andy made a great point, bring back to the country to set up and support local businesses. I'd like to hear a little bit more about what anyone knows about what's going on in that front, because I think that would benefit our economy and all of us, that we could be free to disagree about our religious views.
Well, I think we also have to keep in mind on the Constitution that, yes, states have rights. But states cannot violate the Constitution. Ultimately, the Constitution of the United States is the law of the land. That does not allow a state to violate, because states have rights. It doesn't make them Gestapo.
States have powers. They don't have rights. States are government.
Okay, they have power, but they still have
rights for citizens. Powers are for government. States have powers.
State cannot give you the right to allow police officers to
whatever. Sarge is stomping on that other speaker.
That's my co-host, Cool Mike. Don't worry. We sometimes take the gloves off here.
All right, no problem.
And we're all friends.
Bare knuckle brawl. me and Mike are bare knuckle brawl on innumerable days.
I love your show.
I understand. A homosexual has exactly the same right to marry that I do. It's not one jot, tittle, or iota different. Why
okay.
are we saying they don't
Sarge,
have
Sarge, get off the marriage, Sarge. Let's get on to other things. Marriage is a personal matter.
Yeah, I want to go back to that, because I am speaking specifically to federalism. federal. We have a our republic is essentially based on kind of a triad. The Montesquieuan notion of separation of powers is one of the paramount principles. That is, power being separated into the executive, legislative, and judicial branches. That's one. One is very important. Two, the notion of individual rights, God-given, unalienable rights that were not granted to you by the United States government or the Constitution, but are recognized before the Constitution of the United States ever existed, as given to you by your creator God, of which the government is obligated to defend. And number three, number three of the triad is the concept of federalism, in which the states are free to legislate in matters that which they are not forbidden to legislate by the Constitution of the United States or the subsequent amendments to the Constitution. That forms the stool upon which our constitutional concept is based. And they all kind of go together, and to some degree they overlap.
Sarge.
Okay. Leslie.
Do you know anything, Sarge, about free trade and its impact on local businesses in America? Do you know anything about that?
I'm pretty much familiar with Adam Smith, yeah. And I'd like to go back to the Smithian and the Keynesian notion of free markets instead of this crony capitalist jive we've got in the United States right now.
All right, talk about that.
Did you say
Keynesian? Ludwig Mises, Hayek, the Austrian school.
You had me scared there.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Boy, was I wrong. I don't know. I got Keynes on the mind lately. No, I didn't mean that. I mean, the Austrians and Adam Smith. Yeah. Yeah, I'd like to get back to right now, under Barack Obama, what we're seeing is an institution of American-style fascism. It's called crony capitalism. This thing with Solyndra, GM, Chrysler. This is American-style fascism.
So that didn't exist under
capitalism.
Bush? Under George Bush, that didn't exist?
It existed, too.
We're talking individuals, regardless. Well, yeah, but I mean, the bottom line is you can't really say because you're Republican, you're conservative, or because you're Democrat, it's an individual thing. We are, for the most part, most of us believe in Tea Party principles as conservatives. And, you know, as you mentioned, Barry Goldwater, that's a perfect example. You can't really, just because somebody is a Republican or someone is of a party, you can't necessarily assume. And you could even say that with the Tea Party. You can't assume that they believe in the same principles, whether it's finance or maybe liberal on other social issues or et cetera. I think we are all stuck in the mindset in some ways. Because George Bush was a Republican, therefore he is conservative. And that's just not true. And the same thing goes back with throughout history. I mean, you know, it's more of a, I don't know, one of those things where it's in our mindset since we're younger. You know, that it's this way because it's that way. And it's not. And just in response, you know, being a new conservative, you certainly sound like a very sound conservative, and I hope you'll join Annie and I on Tuesdays and Fridays, because I think today's show, you're adding an awful lot of true conservatism to the program.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, we're coming down to our last 7 minutes, so I want to get people to do their little closing statement. I'm going to start with Thomas, because he's been here. Thomas, tell us about your show and when it's on and what's coming up, and then we'll move on.
Tonight at 5 p.m. Central Time on the Visible Conservative Christian Leash, this is my Pro-Life Fridays, and where we talk about the pro-life issues, not just abortion, cloning, stem cell research. And I have my co-host on Fridays who is an expert in the area of life issues. So that'll be 5 o'clock Central.
All right, Thomas, your Skype is breaking up.
All right,
Thomas.
Oh, I hate Skype.
Well, why don't you go into the chat room and post up the location for your show there? That way, people know where to find you. Sarge, you got anything coming up?
Not immediately. On Sunday, a Terry O'Brien show I'll perform as a critiquator from 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And next week, Rapid Fire will be back on the air 4:30 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. And we'll be rocking there. And as usual, Annie, you're always welcome to show up. I'd love to have you on board. Same with you, Cool Mike.
Yeah.
And everybody else, including Kay Leslie, you come on board on Rapid Fire with us too, and we'll hash it out some more. We don't demand agreement on our show, just clarity. In fact,
excellent.
We prefer it when you don't agree with us.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Sarge.
Thanks, Sarge.
You know, and that is a true difference between most of us and
here on Blog Talk is, at least on the very conservative end, is that I think in many ways people say, well, you know, I disagree, and bang, if you're in some of the other categories, such as the, at least my experiences with a lot of the liberal type side, they cut you right off. You can't disagree. If you disagree on them on one issue over 1,000, you still get cut off. Here, you know what? So what? We slug it out. One day, you always live to slug it out another day.
Okay. I want to recognize people that are in the chat room, and I want to thank Kay Leslie for the call, and I welcome him to come back anytime. We have some fantastic people in the call. We've got A. Fordson, too. We got B. Long. We got Booty Bannon. And doctors in the house, C. Robert Jones. I did upload Dr. Jones's new promo, but I forgot to put a title on it, so it says PSA, and I've got three of them up there, and I don't know which one is yours. Otherwise, I would have played them today. I promised to play them all on Tuesday. Dr. Jones has a great show here on Blog Talk. Check him out. Again, Kate Leslie we have here. We've got Etom. Oh, God, I can't even pronounce this one. Etom something or other. It looks like alphabet soup on the air. And
I think that's Erica Tomczak is what I think it is.
Oh, okay.
My old friend. And Perry Steele's here, too.
Yes, Perry's been in. He's been up in the chat room popping in and out and everything else, having fun. Welcome aboard, Perry. And he's got a great show. Normally comes on 8 or 9 o'clock tonight. Perry, feel free to post that up in the chat room. Of course, we got Sarge. And we got Sexy Sammy. Sammy has been joining us today, which is fantastic. And Sammy, if you got a show coming up, please put it up inside the chat room also. We've got Tesla. Socialism is not an option. It's always a fantastic show on the weekends. He has one coming up tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday. So check out Tesla at blogtalkradio.com/Tesla. We've got our friend Thomas, the invisible conservative, who put his post up there. And White Punk on Dope. I love some of these things that people come up with inside the chat room. Well, anyway, what's coming up this Tuesday, we're going to have Pam Geller, that notorious number one blog spot on the hit list with Barack Hussein Obama and Rambo Emanuel, is Atlas Shrugged 2000. So Pam Geller will be talking with us because I want to talk to her about this proposal Hillary Clinton has about outlawing talking bad about Islam. It's something the U.N. is considering, and she's going to try to force it on us along with the Small Arms Treaty. So we're going to have an interesting conversation on Tuesday. And I have possibly on Friday, our South Carolina GOP chair, Chad Conley. I'm trying to hook that up with his press agent. I should be getting a word back from him shortly, whether or not that's going to happen. So that will be on the 20th, because the 21st is the South Carolina primary, and everyone's going to be biting their nails going into that. Meanwhile, I'm heading up to Myrtle Beach to be at the South Carolina Tea Party Convention and rubbing elbows and hobnobbing all the way. So I want to thank everyone for listening in, and I want to welcome my co-host back, Cool Mike.
Thank you very much, Annie. I'm looking forward to we got a lot of exciting things coming up for the year, so stay tuned.
Oh, yes. So I will hope everyone will have a happy, healthy, and safe weekend, and I will see you all next week. Until then.
If you find yourself in trouble, count on me, my friend. I'll get right up in trouble.
You've been listening to Southern Sense Blog Talk Radio. Producer and your hostess extraordinaire is Ann Ubelis. The theme music, American Stand Up, is written and performed by Don Fortney. For more from Don, check out his webpage, teapartymusic.webs.com. Southern Sense is a proud member of Ghost Fighter Radio and Freedom Media Network. Southern Sense is common sense. Take it out, Don.
American. Well, look me straight in the eye. Tell me what you see. I'll tell the truth every time. Yes, you can count on me. I've got the backbone, American. I've got the heart, American. I've got the will.
What happened?
American, will you stand up? Don't sit down. Stand up, don't back down. Stand up and shout it out. Stand up, let's make it loud. American, 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 American.